cases on our docket this afternoon for argument. We will hear the first case and take a brief break for a panel change, and then we will hear the second case on our docket. Understand that council have announced to the clerk how much time they would like, and we are ready to proceed. If you would please call the first case.
The court will now call on for electric delivery company versus Giovanni Lane Corporation. Motion for Mrs. E. Payne and Officer Lane. Michelle E. Robinson, Mr. Lane Cooper, and Officer Lane.
Thank you. May it please the court, Mr. Cooper, Ms. Robertson. My name is Steve Hayes. I represent Encore today. Because the court had indicated it would like some clarification on the location of easements, I thought we'd start with that first. If you want to keep notes, in the handout, blue handout that I provided this morning, behind tab 6, you'll find the first document that we're going to look at. And I'm going to go over here to the easement part.
This is
Exhibit
21, which is a survey that's put together by the surveyor. Lot 6 and 7 is where the chip high 5 foot wide transformer was that was in place at all times close to this wall. In looking where the easement is located for Gibbons Home, provided the easement is turned behind tab 7 in the handout, that's this particular document. This came from a page of plaintiff 56. The easement themselves, plaintiff 56, plaintiff 281 to 285, each one of them had a drawing sort of like this behind it, showing where that particular portion is placed. The highlighting that I provided here basically shows where most of those easements were. Pre-turned road that I mentioned to you before runs like this in front of the residential lot 57. It runs up here and across in front of the east portion of the commercial lot, which is up here in the corner. You will see some easements along the front of the residential lot, the west side of Pre-turn Road, and north of here, that's across the front of the commercial lot, and on the north of these easements actually also extended further beyond the Pre-turn Road. There were also easements on the east side of Pre-turn Road that I've indicated in the appearance highlighted, but also extended even further north here. The single phase line that you've heard about that was installed to serve the residential lot, the commercial lot, ran up the easements on the east side of Pre-turn Road, crossed the under Pre-turn Road, and over the pool up for that, and ran back down on the east or west side of Pre-turn Road. The three phase line was relocated into the easements on the west side of Pre-turn Road, that I mentioned in front of the residential lot and the commercial lot.
That has nothing to do with the oral easement which followed the west.
The oral easement, the trial judge recognized, would have been easement that in fact existed to allow as far as the piece of concern placement of
right.
the electric cable.
Right. I'd now like to move on to some of the other issues in this particular case, starting out with the pervasive effect of the utility regulatory system and the tariff on all the issues in this case, starting with the testimony of the witnesses. The witnesses testified.
Why don't you start out by addressing whether or not that was provoked?
Okay, that's what we'll do. And actually, it all kind of ties in together. We've got the witnesses' testimony where they talk about the utility regulatory system. The state and the PUC, in fact, regulate Oncor, which is a utility. The PUC promulgates the tariff, which is the detailed set of rules that governs Oncor and its customer. It limits what Oncor can expend on costs. It requires the customer to provide easements, all that kind of stuff. The trial judge heard all of that testimony from the witnesses. The trial judge also was aware of the terms of the tariff. And if you look behind tab 9 in the handout, I've actually highlighted some of those terms of the tariff that actually confirm the same thing the witnesses confirm. I've highlighted them just so we could find them easily today. On the first page that has highlighting,
where?
Behind tab 9 in your handout, Judge. It'll be the same number. Yeah. It provides that the tariff governs the provision of delivery service by Oncor. Back on the back page of that particular handout, it talks about it governs the installation of services such as the single-phase line, the removal and relocation of facilities like the three-phase line, that the retail customer has to cover all services of costs of relocation, and that prior to providing any underground services, that the customer has to provide easements to Oncor for those utilities or for those facilities, such as the three-phase line and the single-phase line. Now, the reason all that makes a difference on the preservation issue is because twice the trial court, well, number one, the trial court informed everyone at trial that he had read the easement, and twice he, I'm sorry, read the tariff, and twice he invoked the tariff to make rulings. Once to tell Giovanni Holmes that he did not plead a cause of action under the tariff and therefore could not get an issue on it. Once when we moved for directed verdict and we got to the point of saying as to consideration, the trial judge cut us off. not impolitely, but just said, as to consideration, consideration is present, and here's why. And one of the reasons he listed was that the tariff created consideration. Now, he was wrong in that regard, but he was...
Do we really even care about that since it's a jury verdict? Don't we care more what was in front of the jury?
Except on what constitutes consideration, because that's a question of law. The jury wasn't asked to decide whether consideration existed or not, and it would have been inappropriate for it to have been asked that because, as a matter of law in this case, consideration didn't exist. And whether it does what constitutes consideration, that's a matter of law for the courts. That being the case, the jury verdict in that issue is immaterial. It is, and we can raise that point in our motion for JNOV, which we did. We said there's no binding contract. In fact, we pled in our answer that there is no valid enforceable binding contract in this case. In our motion for directed verdict, we asserted that. We asserted no consideration. We asserted no offer, no meeting of the minds. We raised those same things in our motion for judgment notwithstanding verdict and in our supplemental motion for judgment notwithstanding verdict. No, we did not. And as a matter of fact, at least in those motions, we did not. But it was the trial judge was aware of it, and that's the whole issue. The trial judge raised it on its own. This court... I'm sorry.
Wait, say that again.
Yes.
You don't raise it, but the judge has heard about it, so it's his responsibility to preserve your error?
He's not, I don't know that it's his responsibility to preserve error, but he's aware of the tariff and its effect.
Okay.
And he rules on it.
He could be aware of contributory negligence, but you have, seems to me, have to bring it to his attention and say, you know,
well, but in the,
consent or something.
In the context of what was going on, the evidence that was offered, the admission of the tariff in evidence by Giovanni Holmes, it's in front of him and he's aware of it. As this court pointed out in Brock versus Briones, which we cited in our briefs, in that particular case, all the party did at trial, the party said, we object, there is no evidence that we ratified anybody's conduct. And this court held, even though the word agency apparently was not mentioned in the objection at trial, this court held that that was enough to make the trial court aware and to preserve error that the jury instruction misstated the law of agency and, in fact, prevented the jury from considering all the evidence that it should have considered. No. That's as to Giovanni Holmes. Giovanni Holmes was trying to, I think, assert that it was entitled to some kind of recovery under the terms of the tariff. And that's when the trial judge said, wait a minute, you can't recover on the tariff. You didn't plead a cause of action based on the tariff. I've read the tariff.
Well, how can they not recover by not pleading the tariff if you can use the tariff as an affirmative defense and not plead?
Well, but I think that we did plead it by implication when we said there's no enforceable contract, and for them to assert a cause of action, I mean, they do have to plead the elements of their cause of action to recover on it. I think.
Do you plead it just by saying there's no enforceable contract without telling the court why, so that it can make a rule?
What's in our answer is what we pled, Judge, and it raised that there was no special exception as to that.
Okay.
Yes.
The trial court said that the consideration.
Yes,
the
trial court.
That
yes, that's correct. The trial court invoked the tariff and said, here's what the tariff does. It was wrong, but if the test is that we only make the trial court aware of something, or the trial court is only aware of something if it rules correctly, I mean, that just can't be the law. In addition to, is that okay?
Yes, you have 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you. In addition to that on consideration, the fact of the matter is we had an easement where we could move the three-phase line into. The reason that easement was not used, it was the existing easement all along. The reason that easement was not used is because Giovanni Holmes insisted that this chest-high transformer that was in existence and in place at all times, during any time you want to look at in this lawsuit, absolutely had to be moved off of its property, period.
I thought there was evidence that it couldn't be moved because of trees.
No. They tried to take the position that you couldn't cut trees down, but you can bore under trees. We're going to bore under trees on McLean's property.
You're talking the existing easement. You're talking about this yellow easement?
No, no, no. The existing
the
easement.
Easement?
No.
The planted easement that's over here, 25 foot wide,
okay.
Is the easement that we can
got it. Got it.
And we could have moved it into there. There's space down at the bottom of that where the transformer could be moved into, but we couldn't use that because they insisted that the transformer be moved completely off their property. And as they conceded, wherever the transformer had to go, the line had to go. That means additional easements had to be obtained. But that's their choice. That's not our choice.
But still, how does that negate the fact that you agreed to move it where they wanted to?
We had to move it where they wanted to. The tariff requires that happen. We don't have a choice.
Oh, right. I'm not complaining about that.
Oh, okay.
You don't have a choice.
I'm sorry?
I'm complaining about the transfer. You don't have a choice. You have to move it.
If we have to move the line where they want it, what we're saying is we could have moved the thing, if left to our own devices, into the easement that we had. They would not allow the transformer to be left on their property.
And so all these delays were only occasioned by that and not by anything else?
No, there were weather instances and that kind of stuff, but it took a long time to get... Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
My time is up.
Goes back.
May it please the court. When they asked me to get involved in this case, I said, I can't read these blueprints. I need to get a blueprint for dummies. And so this is what we came up with. Try to help the court with something as simple as possible. But let's talk first off about the tariffs. There was never a motion for summary judgment. It was never pled as a defense. It was never raised at a pretrial hearing. There was never a motion for directed verdict. There was never a motion for judgment on the pleadings. There was never a motion for JMV based upon the legal defense that they're asserting that this tariff consists of. In fact, I think one of the more telling pieces of evidence in the trial was that Encore originally had persuaded the trial court to grant a motion in limine with respect to the tariff. That is, they persuaded Judge Evans not to allow the tariff to come into evidence. Obviously, he changed his mind, and later on, it did come into evidence, but it was at their insistence that it did not, or that a limine was filed. Now, and I was trying to think, what is an analogous situation here? They're arguing basically, one is whether or not the tariff is consideration. That's on the consideration argument. But they're also saying the tariff is a legal bar to recovery. And what would be different if I, as a defender, or them as a defendant, asserted statute of limitations? Well, let's say I didn't put it in my pleadings, but for the first time on the Court of Appeals, I said, you know, they waited more than 2 years to bring this lawsuit. And I want this Court of Appeals now to grant judgment, reverse the judgment against me, and grant judgment in my favor because I have this legal defense. It wasn't pled, and I never raised it to the trial judge, but nonetheless, it is a legal defense. And I want this Court of Appeals to grant judgment in my favor. I would lose. because this court would say under Rule 33.1, I had an obligation to present it to the trial court and to obtain a ruling, because it wouldn't be fair to Judge Evans or to any trial judge for this court to be addressing arguments that were, frankly, never presented to the trial judge. And that's
the argument is that implicitly it was presented, and that Judge Evans understood that that was the argument, and that Judge Evans actually ruled that the tariff was consideration.
He ruled the tariff was consideration, which is a, and we're going to come to the consideration argument, but with all due respect, that is different from their argument that the tariff is a legal bar to a breach of contract or a trespass claim. Two different issues. Is it consideration or is it a legal bar?
And so are you conceding that by Judge Evans being aware of it and ruling that it was consideration, that they have preserved it?
Absolutely not. This argument that we have, that we're hearing in the briefs and here at the oral argument, is being raised for the very first time.
But how can you say that if Judge Evans on the record said
it's consideration?
Right.
You're saying he's preserved it for consideration.
Consideration.
And I think Judge Gabriel was asking you, I put words in that, that he preserved it for all purposes or for affirmative defense.
Clearly, Judge Evans addressed it for the purposes of consideration. Is the tariff consideration? That was preserved. The issue of whether or not the tariff is a legal bar, that is, we can't bring a cause of action for breach of contract, trespass, or anything else, that was not preserved. It was never presented. You look throughout the post-judgment motions that were filed, and you will never see the word tariff mentioned at all in the post-trial motions. They never did ask for a judgment to be rendered in their favor based upon the existence of the tariff. They've talked about consideration, and that was talked about, and we'll come to that in a second, but whether or not, as a matter of law, the existence of this tariff operated as a legal bar was never raised in the trial court. They cite the
I see that the exhibit is marked as plaintiff's exhibit number 506. That's what the tariff is marked as. Is that put into evidence before the jury?
There was a version of the tariff that was put in before the jury. I don't know if it's the same version that's attached here too. Yes, it's 506. It would be the same version that was here. But as I was, you know, one of the issues they would have to prove is, well, this was the tariff that was in force at the time. And I look on the back page, page number 2, which says definitions were effective July 1st, 2010, which obviously would not have been in effect at the time that this was going forward. So, first off, with respect to whether or not the tariff is a legal defense, we believe it's waived. We don't believe it is a legal defense, but certainly it's waived. And the Brock versus Briones case out of this court, it involved jury charge error, not failure to raise a defense to a claim. That is, whether or not the trial court properly was informed of an objection to the charge, not the failure at all to plead, request issues regarding what they claim to be a legal defense. Now, getting on to the consideration, again, that was discussed by Judge Evans as far as whether or not it would be consideration, but there were other things discussed. In fact, Judge Evans, on page... Volume 12, page 134 through 135 through 136, goes through several pieces of evidence that he believes, as a matter of law, constitute consideration. And he goes, and first off, there is a presumption that when parties enter into a contract, that it is supported by consideration. That is a presumption that this court has recognized in a case law that this court has decided, the the City of Colony versus North Texas Municipal Water District. But number two, there were several benefits to Encore, and consideration can be a benefit to Encore, or it can be a detriment to Giovanni Holmes. The benefits were being relieved from their status as a trespasser, It stopped Giovanni from building on a three-phase line and risking injury to the occupants. That is, if one of the contractors or one of the homeowners were digging and they hit a three-phase line and were injured and sued Encore, it would relieve Encore of that liability. Number three, Encore would receive income from the transmission of electricity to the new development. As far as Giovanni's detriment, the court said there were at least two or three things that were detriment to Giovanni Homes that would support the contract for consideration. Number one was they surrendered a legal right to go against Encore for the location of the trespassing line. Number two was Giovanni Homes agreed to go out and secure easements, not just for its property, right here, right here, but agreed to secure all up and down the line. In fact, they went to McLean's, they went to Cavonian Homes, to Benson and Adams, and got four separate easements to allow this line to be relocated. It involved a lot of time. It involved several surveys that had to be paid for, that were paid for by Giovanni Homes. And the court said this was adequate consideration as well, as far as going out and doing something that we weren't required to do. We're not required to go out and obtain easements for other property owners for Encore's benefit. Their own director of commercial development, Mr. Avail, testified that it was their corporate company policy to go out and get easements where they were laying lines, and that by doing this, we were doing something that normally would be done by them. So we believe, frankly, that there was plenty of consideration. The jury heard it. The jury was the fact finder in this case, and the jury was entitled to decide whether or not it was a benefit to Encore or whether or not it was a detriment to Giovanni Homes. And so we believe that it was submitted to the jury. The jury made the decision, and that certainly under the standard review that we're operating under, and again, they're only attacking this under a no evidence standard, not a factual sufficiency, but under a no evidence standard where, you know, we look at the evidence in the light most favorable to Giovanni Homes, disregard contrary evidence, indulge in every inference in favor of the jury's verdict, that certainly there is evidence to support that as well. Now,
their position seems to me that yes, they had to go get all the easements, they had to go get the easements because they didn't want the transformer where it was, otherwise they didn't have to go get the easements because it was already there.
No, there was conflicting testimony in that, Judge, Justice McCoy. As far as locating here on the original boundary, there was testimony that was required and coming down to the street. They brought in someone, I believe, looking at the recording of Encore.
Okay, so those involved coming up here. So what?
Well,
hadn't stopped anybody before.
Well, actually, our position was that certainly Giovanni Homes could not go on to someone else's property.
But I thought the property was 10 foot on your property, so you're on your property.
To locate it on that would require the cutting of the trees. Then there was conflicting testimony by the expert that was hired by Encore about boring under the trees. But
you own all the property, so you can get all kinds of equipment on this side of the easement, including this property and this property. You own this property. This was owned by someone else who lived there.
That's okay. Now, Encore also has argued in their brief that somehow Giovanni's their performance of the contract was excused by Giovanni's breach, that Giovanni did something to breach the contract, which excused their performance. However, Again, it wasn't pled. There was no request by Encore to the judge to include an excuse instruction in the charge. And if you go to the PJC dealing with contract formation, contract breach, defenses to contract, it would be submitted in the form of an instruction. There was no instruction that was ever requested by Giovanni Holmes regarding excuse. And so we believe that, again, like the tariffs, that this has been waived as well. They never moved for a directed verdict. They never moved for J&OV on the issue of excuse. And so we believe that the evidence regarding whether or not it's sufficient is governed by the actual charge that was submitted, Pekka versus Osterberg. When we're dealing with whether or not there is factual or legal sufficiency, we're going to go by what the actual evidence was that was submitted, or the actual charge was that was submitted. This was the charge. It really wasn't objected to, and we believe that this will be the one that would govern what the sufficiency of the evidence should be. I think I've covered the points that Mr. Hayes addressed, and unless there's further questions, I'll give back my time. Thank you.
A couple of things, if I can start. Giovanni Holmes was required to provide the easements. The tariff so provides whether the tariff...
Yes. I'm reading from opposing counsel's brief.
Okay.
He says, the tariff says, retail customers shall execute a written easement with the company. Then it says, neither provision requires the retail customer to obtain easement from surrounding landowners who would also be receiving that service from the landowner. So I think if you're taking the phrase, retail customers shall execute a written easement.
No.
No.
There's an additional line behind tab 9, the last page behind tab 9 in your handout.
Yep.
And the last highlighted line says, prior to beginning of construction, retail customer, that's Giovanni Holmes, provides easements, plural, at no cost to company for the underground conductors, pad mount transformers, and associated equipment. Okay. It doesn't limit the number. It doesn't limit the place. It doesn't limit the owner. It says easements. That's what we're relying on. In addition, the only reason those easements were needed is because Giovanni Holmes insisted that that transformer, which had always been in place and which it was aware of when it bought those lots, had to be moved off of its property, period. That was the testimony. Well, if that's the case, the line has to follow the transformer. That means it's got to go someplace else besides the platted easement which already exists. If Giovanni Holmes wants that moved into easements somewhere else, that benefits them, not us. We've already got an easement.
Well, how do you address his argument? Y'all don't, he doesn't own the right to
I'm sorry.
He's going to have to go mm-hmm. easement.
Not on that side. He's got 10 feet. You bore under the trees. That's the whole point. He, just like we were going to do on from McLean's property.
How do you get it?
Okay.
I'm not familiar with this.
Let me get
I can't imagine having a piece of equipment sitting here and being able to bore 200 or 300 feet under trees this direction without moving the piece of equipment.
That was the testimony at trial, Judge, that we could bore it that way.
Okay.
The other thing is, though, on the consideration and talking, getting back to the tariff and how it affects everything else in this case, when you look at consideration in our motion for J&OV, we said we got no benefit from this. Okay, no benefit at all, and they're suing for $1 million on a contract, an ad hoc contract, that under the cases interpreting the tariff say they can't even pursue. He's brought up to you the statute of limitations defense and said, how would I raise that if I didn't bring it up at trial? When can you raise an immunity defense? First time on appeal. Citizens National Bank versus Cockrell, The site on that case is 850 Southwest 2nd 462. One of the cases in our brief, Southwestern Bell versus Metrolink, and I noticed this the other night, in fact equated the tariff's effect on contract actions and tort actions as giving immunity, making the utility immune. Now, we think we raised all this at the trial court. We believe it. We think we showed that. But if not, that's kind of where we're coming from now. When you look at the subjective knowledge that went into the sending of that letter, what is it that Encore said in that letter it was going to do? Relocate a single triple-phase line, three-phase line. The tariff requires that be done. It talks about easements. Giovanni Holmes already has to provide those. When we say we got no benefit at all, and they're seeking $1 million, on an ad hoc contract claim that the tariff disallows them bringing. That shows a disproportion between anything we allegedly got and what they're trying to seek out of it, and that shows that it didn't factor into our mindset on anything that might equate to consideration. When you look at the lender liability cases they cite, lenders, when they loan you money or commit to loan you money, they actually subjectively evaluate how likely you're going to pay them back and how likely your business venture is to succeed, and they set the commitment fee and the interest based on that risk. The Barnhill case that they cite for the first time, the reason that the court there said that the collateral contracts were within the consideration of the utility is because that utility had a 20-year history with that contractor with subjective knowledge that the contractor had collateral contracts when it contracted with the utility. We don't have that here. We didn't know about the construction loans. We didn't know about the earnest money contracts, some of which didn't exist. My time is up.
I have a question about the damages.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was ready to start. Were the damages limited in time to that time period? In other words, was the evidence just damages from basically when we asked you to move it until it was done, or were the damages?
It wasn't even restricted that much. There was no time restriction put on the damages. Not in the jury questions. I can't remember, Judge. I know that when the discussions were going on in the jury charge, and I apologize, I just can't remember how the back and forth went in the charge conference. But I know that Judge Evans mentioned that I'm smiling because I know Judge Evans. At any rate, he mentioned to the parties that here's how you're going to argue it. You're going to argue it that there was a period of time after which Encore could perform based on all what was going on, and that our damages in that time frame, that's what they're responsible for. I can remember that discussion. I can't remember what prompted it, but it's in the charge conference that's in the reporter's record. So I don't know if that answers your question or not. I do have one mechanical thing, and I gave this to counsel. I've got a letter that I wanted to file with the court. We pulled down one paragraph, excuse me, out of our brief of cross-appellee. We withdraw a sub-issue from our appellant's brief, and I needed to correct a cite. I incorrectly cited at the bottom of page 47 of our appellant's brief that the Spencer case stood for the proposition that if the court reversed on the failure to segregate fees, that the remedy is a remand for trial solely on attorney's fees. And I cited to Spencer for that. That's an incorrect citation. It should be to the Tony Gullah case at 314-315. But that's what this letter was about, and I'd request leave of court to file it just to make those corrections. Okay, thanks. Y'all have any problems with it? Thank you. We appreciate the opportunity to argue.
Counsel, you may reply. counsel, thank you so much for your argument here today and your briefing. We